Welcome to Uncurated Podcast, a show for visual artists and designers to share their experiences and learn from each other. I am your host, Kelly. On this podcast, you can expect interviews from extremely talented visual artists, designers, as well as engaging conversations about art and the creative industry, especially in Africa. Hi, and welcome to Uncurated Podcast. My name is Kelly. Please introduce yourself and what you do.
My name is Brian Omolo. I'm an illustrator, a digital artist, a graphic designer, and then I also teach art and design at a college called Africa Digital Media Institute.
Thank you. I'm actually really excited to have you on the podcast because your work is so cool and people really like you and look up to you. So yeah.
Thank you.
How did you start out in the art industry? Like, how did your interest start in illustration and art?
For me, like I've told this story to especially my students quite a few times. Like for me, it started with cartoons. I used to watch cartoons when I was a kid, Club Kiboko, Saturday mornings. And then I would pause the cartoons. And then I would sketch or try to draw the characters that I loved. And one cartoon comes to mind, which is Tom and Jerry. I loved Tom and Jerry back then. Then eventually Lion King came and completely changed. It blew everything away. So I used to just draw just as a way to have fun out of curiosity. And then my parents saw that, they saw what I was doing, and then they made sure I went to schools that that championed creativity and those kind of stuff. So I went on to a school called St. Mary's. And St. Mary's were a really dope place, like for anything extracurricular or creative stuff. Like outside of just books, there's always other things that could develop you, pique your interest. And I think now when I go to secondary school, that's when we started going into fine art. We started with fundamentals, like drawing, how to use different mediums. I discovered I did not like wet medium. So watercolors, watercolors. I liked dry medium. And then we started doing stuff like abstract, and that's when I really, really started to shine, really started to enjoy myself because I was able now to, you know, like when you're drawing still life, regardless of how good a still life plant you draw, the other person has also drawn a plant, you both just have plants. But when you're doing something like abstract, you can be imaginative, you can do different things, and you can do so much. You can do so much with what you're doing. So over time, that just developed. Like you finish high school and you think you want to be a fine artist, and then you realize the fine art world. Okay, you're told the fine art world is tricky, so people send you down. Not really send you down, but I was convinced to try graphic design because it felt like it was more commercially viable. That's how it was pitched to me. But I was also curious about it because I was like, Photoshop, software, computer, let's see what that would be like. I did that, and then it wasn't full, like graphic design in itself was not fully enjoyable to me, or at least the stuff that I saw people doing was not fully everything I wanted. And then I just kept searching, and eventually I would see advertisements, like MTV used to have some really dope advertisements where they show guys who've done like illustration, and then I'd be like, ooh, what's that? And then I went on to uni, and that's when I really now got to know, like the lecturers would introduce this idea of illustration using digital art to market products or to go hand in hand with branding and advertising. So that's when it was like a light bulb moment. Like I didn't know that was an option. I didn't know that was a world I could open myself to. So yeah, and somehow slowly by slowly, year by year, that's led me to where I am today.
First of all, we stan African parents that promote creativity. So
Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
amazing. Yeah, we need more parents like that. Now that you've gone to uni to study design and you're also a lecturer teaching
Yes.
design, there's obviously this debate of like creative people don't necessarily need to go to school to be successful, or they don't need to like go to an institution to get any training because of all of this online courses that you can take and you can be self-taught and still succeed. So would you recommend like a young person who's just out of high school to go and study design in a school? Or would you be like, yeah, you can go ahead and just do your own thing?
That's a really good question. And there's several layers to it. Number one, I think a lot of times people will pitch to you the thing that they experienced. So if someone had a good education experience, they'll tell you to go down that path. If someone had a bad experience, they'll tell you, no, school is a waste. Just go freelance and start on your own. But I've come to see that both, there's many routes to getting to the dream that you want. There's just pros and cons in everything. So you have to choose the one which particularly will fit well for you. I mean, I have that discussion with my students all the time. I'm always like, you guys know you don't have to be here to be a graphic designer. But the advantage of a good school is that it can help cut down the learning curve. A good school. You know, now there are some bad schools which just waste your time, and then you have a bad experience, and then you kind of get turned off by education. And I think there's a lot of creatives who have been turned off by education. I've also had like good educative experiences and also bad ones. So I know like the point of view I have now is you should only study things which are very close to your heart. You know, the idea of studying things just because it will bring success or money is a like it's an old culture of thinking that will send you down a very bad path. I think if you're very passionate about art and you have the opportunity to study and you found a school which you think is a good place where you gain, you should do it, because I had an amazing time when I was in university. Like there are days I couldn't believe I was in school, you know. And I tried to think about my life, like if I didn't have that experience, like I would have missed out on a lot. But it doesn't mean that that was the only way I could have gotten to where I've gotten to now. And I'm talking to the people who would have loved to go to school, and maybe school fees or other things are not there. You can still make it without necessarily formal education. The thing is, you'd have to find communities and environments which will feed you, teach you, force you to grow. Like some might go to an internship, some might decide to become an apprentice of a professional, or you'll be a personal assistant to another artist or work under another artist, and you can grow that way. Some might decide to go the online route, and then join some kind of community. The thing that school does, which you don't even think about when you're young, is it forces you into an environment where like you're held accountable, you're given projects, you have deadlines, and as you're hitting those deadlines, you're growing. So some people find that on the outside. It's a little harder though. It's a little harder, but it's possible. Yeah. So I think either route is possible. So for those who can't afford school, you're in the this is the best time to make it. Like you can make it without school, but those who can afford school and you really love it, it's a worthwhile investment. You'll also gain. Like I really loved my university experience. It was one of the best experiences in my life.
Oh wow, that's interesting. I think that's the best answer to that question. Like whenever I ask that question, people give me like interesting answers, but I feel like you've answered it the best way possible. Oh, that was interesting.
Because it's something which comes up, and I get where people are coming from both sides. Like those who had good education, sometimes they're like, yo, you guys like take school seriously, take advantage of the opportunities, and I understand that. But there are also times when people have had bad experiences and you feel like school is trapping you creatively. So you just want to break out of that place. I mean, there are schools in Kenya, I don't want to name their names, but they are known. Like there are schools, there's one particular one around Thika Road area that people are always dropping out of. People are always dropping out of and citing how like the systems are just old. And that's the thing about creative like courses or schools.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make yourselves flexible to change the times. The creative industry is an industry that's changing so fast. Like even for me as a lecturer, like I'm always like, yo, last year I was teaching guys this, and now that's already obsolete. Now I need to teach them this, and I need to help. And sometimes I'm also, as an artist, adapting to the world out there. And then I also have to train these other guys to adapt to that world out there. So the school has to kind of be ready to mold the times. And when they don't do that, that's when people decide, I'm not going to school. I'm going to figure this out on my own. And I empathize with people like that. I know that there are times they'll feel lost, but some of them actually make it and it becomes a really dope success story.
Yeah. I think those who succeed, like, it's really in them, like, because they have to go the extra mile to make sure that they make it.
It was almost like it was oxygen. Like, it was this or nothing. Like, I really need to make this work because I cannot see myself being anyone else, doing anything else. And therefore, they just worked on the next step and the next step, and eventually they got to the thing that they love.
Yeah. And the point of like institutions growing, we all know how systems work in Kenya. Like if it's a big machine, it will take forever to grow. So honestly, like schools like ADMI, I feel like they're like the best route to go to. I wish that they had more like degrees, because it's smaller than going to, like, for example, UN or KU or all these big schools, because for them, if they're going to make a change, it has to go through this person and this person approval, blah, blah, blah. But if it's smaller, you know, like even your lecturers can be more engaged because their students are, you know, the number is smaller and they can, you know, they can be there for the students and stuff. Like, yeah. So honestly, it's either like go to a good school abroad or go to a smaller institution where you can get good training and good attention from your lecturers and stuff. So yeah.
I mean, I like that, and I how do I answer this? I'm trying to enter my PR side and not say anything that, anyway, let me just be honest. Like,
okay.
It's not that also us, it's not like ADMI also get it perfect. There are some challenges that institutions go through that from the outside you never see until you've worked. Like now, I've been a lecturer since 2016. So I've seen all the inner workings and the challenges that an educational institution goes through. And some of them will really surprise you. Some of them we know, like some of the government policies we have and the syllabuses that they sometimes set that you have to go through, that like set in like archaic times, horrible bureaucracy, horrible ways of working. Those are very difficult challenges for anybody who, if you're listening and you want to start a school, just know those are one of the things that you have to contend with. And it's definitely also a challenge for schools like EDMI, and the bigger ones probably have it even worse because now you find you're more. But the biggest thing I can say, go to places, whether it's a big institution, whether it's a small institution, it all boils down to the people. If you hear there's some lecturer somewhere who teaches something in a way that you love, or whose character or ethics or values are in line with what you want to be, that's now where you need to go. Like, I have an undergrad. I chose not to do a master's because I'm just like, I'm not going through that stress of, you know, CG school striking, CG what, all the craziness that you go through. But if I heard that these particular lecturers or this person, when you hear that there's specific people in places and they're doing amazing things for their class, for their students, that's the value. That's where now you go to. And whether those people are in Kenya Mass or they're in KCA or they're in KU or Nairobi Uni, wherever they are, those are the things that will be valuable to you as someone who's trying to learn. Now you're right, like sometimes smaller schools can make certain big changes or decide to go against the grind, and Edemai have done that from time to time. I think that's probably what helps. Like for me as a lecturer, there's nobody in class forcing me to teach a certain way. I can push back and be like they know me, I don't do exams. That's something which I'm just like, nah, for creative schools, I don't believe in exams. I don't think that's what you'll experience in the real world. In the real world, you'll get a brief, you'll get a client, you'll get a deadline, you know, because some people are introverts, they would rather work at home. Mm-hmm. Some want to work with people, some want to have time to let the idea grow. This old school notion that you have to sit in a room and finish something in a certain amount of time is not realistic, and it's not fair to the people who want to work.
Yeah.
Like, we're different types of learners. That's one powerful thing I've also learned.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us are visual learners, some are tactile learners. Like, you have to hold the pencil or the brush and draw with it. You have to hold the tablet, you have to use the computer, then you learn. And then there's people who learn from like talking. They have to, that's why you'll find your lecturers giving you group projects so that you can talk to each other. So the person who needs to talk to learn or needs to discuss it, they learn when they're in group sessions, they learn in their class discussions. And then there's those who like to read and write. Like, you need to give them notes. You need to tell them, go study these notes, go mm-hmm. read this, you know. And I think high school favored those people the most.
Definitely.
The ones who liked to read and write. And then sometimes the ones for discussions. But some teachers didn't even like discussions. They just came, they wrote notes on the board. You're supposed to write it, and then you have a test.
Mm-hmm.
But for some of us, like for me, visual learner, like I hated school. Like, I mean, I didn't not hate, but I didn't do well in that environment. And it kind of sat on your shoulders like, hey, am I dumb? Am I slow? Like, I'm not academically inclined. But then when I went away to uni, that's when I realized, I'm more of a visual learner. Like, even the notes that I give my students, I don't really give them notes. It's more like presentations. We have a presentation in class, then we talk. So if you feel like you have a place which you kind of have to choose the place which fits the learning. So anybody who's looking for a learning experience, you really need to take time and visit these places. Visit the places. Talk to the people there, talk to the students, not just the sales and marketing people. Sales and marketing will tell you whatever you need to hear.
Yeah.
to say yes, that I can tell you for a fact. Every school will have a sales and marketing team. Talk to the guys who actually go there. Do a deep dive, do like a proper research. And then you'll know the culture of that place, you know. And there's nowhere that's perfect. You just need to know, this is the culture of this place. This is what I'll come to do here.
Yeah.
Whether it's a company, you're interviewing at a company, or you're looking for a school, that's the best way to go about it.
I feel like a lot of creative people would resonate with like the different learning styles, because most creative people, first of all, like most of the creative people I've met are introverts. I've met very few extroverted like artists. And second, they really struggled with like the way the system is made, with like exams and studying like big books and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree with that. Actually, I went to Nairobi Uni and I studied design there. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of theory. Oh my God. But like there was also the part for, we used to do pinups. So we also had like briefs. And so do you like do pinups, or do you tell them to just submit the project when they're done after the deadline?
So the way it works, you'd have the design program will have like, right now it has like 5 semesters. In each sem you'll have like maybe 6-7 units So in the units, we kind of scatter, like you'll find this small assignment. Like for me, you'll find I'll give a, like I'll teach you for like 3 weeks, give you like a small assignment out of five, then teach you another 3-4 weeks, and then give you a big assignment out of 30. Then after that, I give you another, you know, like they're scattered over the 14 weeks, there's, or let's say 12 weeks, there's, you'll find there's some small assignments out of five, maybe out of 10, then there's a big one out of like 30. So for me, it's always I give them a brief, then they have to do it in the form of a presentation. Like they do like a PowerPoint presentation, and then they submit that. Sometimes I also insist on them printing, which during the whole pandemic period, we stopped that thing of printing, but yeah. Now I can see I really need to bring it back because people print for you some horrible work. You're like, oh my goodness. Now I can see why I was insisting on people printing before. So now that at least people have opened up and are back to physical learning, like I've kind of started to make it a necessity for guys to print, because you need to go through those headaches now. You need to know that I might go to a printer and then the colors are horrible, or the it's pixelated, they didn't save it in the proper format, you know, all those stresses of software. So
yeah,
it's good for them to go through those things when they're in school. And I've always like looked up to Nairobi Uni. Like you guys, when you do your pin-ups or like your final presentation,
mm-hmm.
like it's always a really, really fire. Like I would come and I'd see dope stuff. I still remember Nani, the late Jeff,
mm-hmm.
the illustrator. Like I remember going to his pin-up. I remember mm-hmm. we talked at the agency with a pal of mine. And then we're like, Nairobi having a pin-up. Nairobi Uni having a pin-up. And I remember seeing his work and I'm like, wait, this guy is fire. This guy is fire. And I followed him ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So those things are good. And like EDMI, we've tried. Like now we've had five.
Mm-hmm.
Last year we even had a virtual one, which I was really, really proud of. It was super, super hard to organize. But it's a culture that we're trying to slowly set in. I feel like Nairobi Uni, you guys do it more, but we are also trying to, there's something showing your work to people does.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It's a transformative experience. Like you show people the stuff, even if they don't like it, like you get some kind of feedback. First of all, there's no way no one will like everything. There's no way they'll hate. They might like other people's stuff better than yours, but there'll always be some kind of positive energy you get.
Yeah,
but if you're really looking to grow, that experience will do a lot. Like it will create some kind of confidence in you. You'll kind of low key also get kind of hooked to that feeling of, ooh, I finished it. Now I'm excited to see what people will think or what energy I'll get from putting this work out there.
Yeah.
So it's a really good, it's important. It's really important.
Yeah, it also brought a lot of community, because when you see like your classmates' work is like insane, like you can't help but ask mm-hmm. questions, and then you just start like working together and helping each other. So yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting. You've been lecturing for quite a bit. What are some limiting beliefs that you've observed in your students that may be holding them back?
The list is long.
Really?
The list is long. And I think, I'm going to sound like someone who doesn't like their country, but I really blame 844 for a lot of them. It's a bit of 844. And then it's a bit of, like, we're still growing as a culture. We're not yet a culture that fully, like we're starting to appreciate creativity, but we don't value it. We don't value it the way other countries, sometimes even, like talk to any artist or illustrator, mm-hmm. they'll tell you foreign clients will pay you way more than local ones. Like when it's a foreign client, you don't have as much arguments when it comes to the quotation, but when it's a local, mm-hmm. The debate is endless. So I think you see that even in the young people, like they don't see the work as, they don't see design as something valuable. They just see it as something they enjoy doing and they dream of it becoming big, but even them in themselves, they don't see themselves as important as other people from different fields. So that's a huge thing to try and get in the mind that, yes, this thing is valuable. Yes, your work is valuable. Your time is valuable. You should be compensated for such. So that one takes time. I don't even try and unlock and unchain that in SEM1. That one I know I need time. I need to unwind that one pole. Since you're here with us for 5 SEMs, mm-hmm. hopefully I have time to unpack that one for you. But the initial one is, okay, the first and very obvious one is, people think that there's some people who can draw and then there's some who can't draw.
Mm.
Like they come to the illustration class and they're like, I'm not really good at drawing. Me, I can't really draw. And me, I'm always like, that's a myth. Everybody can draw. Everybody can draw. So that 15, 14 weeks is always just like trying to show them everyone can draw. It's just a question of, there are some who can figure a certain level and there's some who can't. But even those who can't reach that high level can still do, like you can be the type of person who draws patterns and stuff like that. And we can use those for merchandise and different things like that, or backgrounds or decorations. Or you can be the person who really has like a lot of like technical skill. So you can draw characters like for Marvel or what have you. But wherever you are on the spectrum, everybody can draw. Like you could draw things even for logos and identities. The thing is, you just have to, you have to reverse your thinking. Like you have to think the normal person creates or does something and then immediately critiques it.
Yeah.
But as a creative, you have to kind of zimmer that part of your brain that is critiquing your stuff, especially like when you're in the initial stage. You have to let all your ideas out. Like you have to be thinking about, okay, this is what I want to create, or this is the brief. And then go straight into that brainstorm process and move quickly, move really quickly, so that the part of your brain that's about to critique this idea, you're like, you have an idea, and then you're like, but this idea is lame, or this idea is boring. Mm-hmm. Let that idea out. Don't critique it yet. The stage for that is much, much later. That's something that will allow you to try more stuff, practice more stuff, do more stuff. And then later on, now you can start critiquing. You can be like, out of these 10 ideas, I think I like these 3. So let me develop these 3 further. Out of these 3, I think I like this one. Develop it further. And then after that, now the next headache is trying to find your audience. Because you'll be very shocked. The things which you think is bad, when you put it out there, guys are like, I love this. This is dope. This is the one I want.
Yeah, but okay, with that point, I've had a lot of creative people saying like, yeah, they can put it out and someone else likes it. But within them, they're like contesting with themselves, like, oh, was this like good enough or not? You know, they're like, they don't feel proud of that piece, but then they've put it out there. So they feel some type of way, whether people like it or not.
There's a few things. One, it could be imposter syndrome. Like maybe you're good and you don't think you're good. Like you kind of need evidence. You feel like, hey, I'm about to get found out. Or two, it could be that your taste, a lot of times our taste is higher than our ability. Like even way back when I was starting, even when I just discovered illustration, like your taste for illustration is up there. Like you're attracted to, like, I remember there's an artist, I used to look at, I still love his work so much. He's not done new stuff in a while. There's a guy called Oli Moss.
Mm-hmm.
And Oli Moss would recreate, in fact, it's an assignment I give my students all the time. I'm sure they're just like, hey, Brayo. I usually have them choose a favorite movie or TV series of their choice and then redesign the poster. So Oli Moss would do that for fun, and then it became his career. Like now actual studios would come to him and have him create stuff. But the point there is, your taste is there. Like your taste is, and even your imagination has seen this, but sometimes your ability is not at the level of your imagination.
True. You know?
So for scenarios like that, you have to allow your imagination time to catch up. And that can only happen through that discipline, consistency, practice. And slowly by slowly, it'll just keep, like you'll catch up. You'll catch up to, it might not be at the far, like even right now, the stuff I imagine is super crazy. My work doesn't match up. But I'm still happy with my work because I can see how it's gotten better month by month, year by year. And there'll come a point where you create something and you're like, woo, I actually like this better than what I imagined. So artists need to get into that experimental mode. You have to have like research and development. The guys who do research and development for apps, for products, even for cars, like them, they never think failure. They just create the first one they can create in the time. And then they get feedback of it, and then they create another one, and then they get feedback, then they make another one. Rather than being that person who, and I've been like that before many times, where, I'm not sure about this idea, so I never even tried. But sometimes, and this is one thing I learned in uni that really freed me.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that we see online that's amazing and super inspiring us and impacting the way we think, we have no idea what round of development that was. Like, I've talked about how I loved Lion King. We have no idea how many different versions of Simba the character designers had to draw before the studio was like, yes, this is the one. So all we see, all you're seeing is people's highlights. You're seeing the highlight reel, but you have no idea all the failed versions, all the sketches, that all the paper that was thrown on the floor, all the struggles,
Yeah.
So it's to allow yourself to do, you have to allow yourself to do the work that you don't think is so good, because that work that you don't think is so good is something you'll gain from that experience that will help you with the next idea and the next idea and the next idea. You know, I've had that problem where it's just like, I want to get a good idea and with my first try, do it perfect. But if I had allowed myself time to do the first one, then from that first one, do a better one, then from that one, do another one. If I had allowed myself to go through more of the revisions or iteration, you always, like, even those clients who we complain about, they made me do another version and another version. When I look at the latest version compared to the previous version, I can still see an improvement. So the client was right. Like, they're usually right about when something is off.
Yeah.
But most times clients are wrong about the solution. They are right when they tell you, this drawing you've done, it's not quite there yet. I don't think this is what my audience would want. They're usually right about that because they know their business, they know their audience better than you.
Yeah.
But they are usually wrong about the solution. So listen to them when they cite a problem, but don't listen to listen to their solution, but also know their solution sometimes is what is usually wrong. But their citing of the problem is usually right.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense, like perfectionism and wanting to be perfect at the first try is usually such a myth, and yet people continue to believe that's a thing. Okay, so are there any like profitable technical skills you think a graphic designer or an illustrator in Kenya should learn that can give them a competitive advantage?
So when I think about the word competition, it's what can differentiate me from everyone else.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing in that is learning what is your own voice, what is your own quote unquote style. Being authentic with the way you express yourself, and sometimes even expressing your own opinions using your work. If you can start that process of finding your own voice, your own style, you already have a personality, you're already an individual. So if you can express those things in your work, you can find ways to do that, whether it's maybe there's certain patterns you use, or there's certain colors you use, or there's certain fonts you use, or there's a way you tell stories. There's so many ways that you can do things in your own way, and there'll be a taste and a style to what you like to do. So that means now kind of growing and learning more about design, how different people express themselves, and then you know, I think I like to express myself like this, so I think I like to have these kind of visual elements in my work. So learn things like the fundamentals of design or of art, like learn from what other people have done even before, not so that you can copy them, but just so there's certain fundamentals you need to know, that when you don't know or don't use, your work just looks very, it's like when you're walking around a tower.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain billboards you see around Globe or around River Rodi that are nowhere near as good as the billboards you see let's say in Kenyatta Avenue or Koinange. And it's not that Kenyatta Avenue is a better street than those others. It's just the care that is put into one person's work or the knowledge that one particular designer has is more than the others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what differentiates you. So I think know the rules before you just decide to break them. You can still break them, but at least you'll be breaking them with good reason. So know those fundamentals, like the principles of design, the visual elements of design. And those are things you can just watch online and know.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is to find the thing that you're naturally gifted at. Some people are very gifted at drawing. So you probably want to develop into that area. Then there are some who are gifted at creating characters. Some are very gifted at editing video. Others are gifted at 3D software, photography. And sometimes you have more gifts than one. Some are gifted at leading people. Like you're the one who, in a brainstorm, you bring people together, you lead the discussions, you know what to say to spark everyone's thinking, and then the ideas start flowing. Some are good at organizing tasks. Like they're the ones who you need to have them there because they'll keep everyone accountable, make sure nothing is being missed.
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so on. Like discover that which is your gift, your natural gift, and then invest in that. Become passionate about that. It's sort of like there's that sentence where people tell you follow your passion. That's an incomplete sentence.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of need to make sure you're following your gift, and then become passionate about your gift, and then use it to help others. You know, help people, help companies. You know, and make sure they pay you as you're helping them.
Yeah.
But beyond the nitty gritties and the learn this tool or learn, because some people will be like, you have to be good at After Effects. If you want to be a designer, you have to be good at After Effects. Not necessarily true. If it's your gift to do After Effects and then you decide to invest in that, then trust me, you'll do well. I think if you're gifted at something, somewhere along the line, an opportunity for you to express that gift will come. But mm-hmm. you have to do the work of understanding. What is it that I am naturally gifted at? What are the clues that I've seen in my life that make me know me, I'm a logo designer at heart, or me, I'm a UI designer, or me, I'm an illustrator, and so on and so forth.
Basically, learn as much as you can and then decipher which one stands out and which one you seem to be better at.
More like even play. Like play, experiment, try different things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll discover, okay, I'm naturally good at this one, and then go in that direction. Then you'll be good. And then know the fundamentals of that space that you're trying to get into. That way, even when you want to do things in your own different way, you'll be doing it within reason. It's like for me as an illustrator, I might want to just use color whichever way I want. But if I'm not aware of color theory mm-hmm. and how to maybe contrast certain things from others, or how to choose colors which will have more harmony together. If I'm not aware of those rules, there'll be times when I make choices which disturb the eyes of the audience. Like you've seen people who put bright text on bright backgrounds. They can't see your text now, you know?
Yeah.
Or other examples. Like, so, and some people learn these things just from looking at other people's work. Like you'd be looking at, like I talked about how I love Olimos.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be looking at Olimos's work and then you'd be like, hey, this guy does color. Is something about it. And by the way, even your clients sometimes know. It's just that they don't know what they know. Like your client will say weird things like something is off. There's a vibe that's off. You've studied design and you know the problem is the typography, or the problem is the alignment, or the color, or there's no hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
You can articulate the reason. Then they just have a feeling based mm-hmm. off of knowing their audience and knowing and seeing, because all of us are visual. We were watching movies, we've been bombarded with ads, we've read newspapers and different media. So everybody has a visual sense. By the time they get to a certain age, everybody has that sense. So even the people you're trying to serve, I think I'm very client-oriented. Like a lot of the work I've done has been targeted towards helping clients or getting hired by clients. But even if you're just making work for yourself, eventually you kind of intend people to buy that thing and to enjoy that thing. So there's some things you could learn that will make your life a lot easier rather than just making mistakes that you don't know you're making.
Now that you spoke about asking the clients to pay and making sure that they pay, do you usually like talk to your students about like pricing and like do you give them some kind of like guidance in terms of like how they should price their work and stuff? Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. it's not like graded or anything, at least not yet, but it's definitely a conversation we have. And even right now, like the current group of SEMFIs who are finishing, a very, very talented class. They're probably one of the most talented class I've ever taught at EDMI. So for sure, it was like, yo, you guys, we have to have that conversation. Because I'm very sure, like I was telling them, I'm very sure some of you are already dealing with clients, already people want you to work with them. And therefore that means some of them have already been exploited or had like bad experiences. Right now, especially like since the pandemic started, businesses were in dire need of creatives. They needed content, they needed designs, they needed to get the word out there about what they're doing. So sometimes you'll find because of that kind of a situation, they will tell you whatever it is you want to hear, promise whatever you want to be promised. And then as soon as the work is done, they ghost you. Or sometimes they're just experimenting with you. Mm-hmm. They don't really know if it will work, but they're desperate and they want to try it. And they experiment with you. And then you find it doesn't work. And then you've not been paid and life goes on, you know? Yeah. So it's a conversation we have. Like one thing I try and tell them is never be in a hurry to make a deal work. No. Go through the process first. Have them fill out some kind of a brief, or you can create a brief with them. Like there's certain questions at the beginning. Okay, what is the goal of this project? What are you trying to accomplish? Who is the target audience? What is the unique thing about you guys, your product or service? What is the vibe? You know, your tone of voice. Do you want to appear funny? Do you want to appear professional? Do you want to appear whatever vibe you're trying to look for? Those are like basic things you need to know. Deadline, what is the deadline for this thing? But ultimately, these questions help you determine what is the thing you're trying to accomplish? Am I the person that can accomplish it? Because sometimes you're not. And therefore, now you need to recommend them to someone who can. But if you find you are the person who can accomplish it, those questions help you determine, like, in a vague sense, the kind of value that you'll be creating for them with this work. And I'm a big believer in value-based pricing. I'll charge people based on the value I've created for them. Like I'll charge them a fraction of the value I'm creating for them. And reasonable, fair business people understand that, and they're okay with that. The unreasonable people, you know, the ones who want to exploit, they'll have a problem with that. They'll be like, they want to have their cake, eat it, and leave with nothing, not even crumbs. Yeah. So I teach them some of the things to look out for, you know, some of the red flags. And one thing I would like to say is it's not always clear cut. Like there's not always an exact number like, I'm creating 1 million in terms of value. I'm creating 30 million. I'm creating 200,000. You'll become better at that with time. Like the more you learn, the more you read about business, the more you interact with other creatives in your space, the more you become aware that the going rate or the value for branding, like when you do good branding for a company, you've created for them this much, or you've solved for them a problem of this and this much, and therefore you should charge this much. What I try and make sure is that at least by the time they're finishing, they know a bad deal when they see one, and they say no. You know, no is such a powerful and important word. If you're going to get into anything where you're doing stuff for clients, you have to learn this. Like, and there's 100 different ways to say no, but a lot of times you have to be ready to turn something down. And that's how you get to the thing which you're supposed to say yes to.
Wow, I feel like you're like a really good teacher, honestly. Like, you have that like nurturing teaching vibe, which is like nice. So guys, go to ADMI and study graphic design with Ryan.
Thank you.
Yeah. So based on your own experience, what's like your experience with now in your projects and the clients that you have interacted with and worked for? What's an experience that you've had that was like a teachable moment for you? It could be positive or negative, but like that experience or that client was a proper teachable moment for you.
Like the good experiences I've had, they've all had a certain thing in common, where it's that the client had a clear idea on what they were trying to achieve, what they wanted. Even if they didn't know what they were trying to create, either they knew what they wanted to create, or they participated with you in looking for that thing they're trying to create. So some clients already have a brief. They bring you a brief and you're supposed to execute. And it's a good, well laid out brief. But other times, they participate with you. Like, I'll ask them questions, they'll answer, they'll give me information. I ask more questions, they give me more information. And therefore, it creates a clear pathway to what it is we're trying to accomplish, and it works out. But the clients who, like, they don't participate in that process, they don't give you a brief, it's just very vague. And then, like, and it's usually accompanied with a hasty deadline. Those ones never really end well. It usually means they were never really planned for this process, or they don't respect the process, or they're not even clear on what they're trying to accomplish. Me, I've had a client even tell me, we are not even sure what we want until you show it to us. So I was just like, my heart, I was just like, what is this I'm good? And I was just excited to work with them because they've created things that I was very, very passionate about. Like, you know, those kind of people who, like, you just want to have them in your portfolio. Then you jump into the project and you realize, oh my God, these guys don't even know what they want. They don't even have to provide you clarity to get what you want. So you're just going to keep shooting in the dark until sometimes they see something. The clients who, like, they participated, and that's when I started to realize, like, not every client is for you. You need to go to the clients and you need to sense, like, when a client gets in touch with me, I'm trying to sense, okay, are we a good fit? Are they participating in this process? Like, it's 70% creative, 30% client. But some clients only want to bring 5% to that process. So you have to be aware of that because it'll end up hurting you. You're the one who will suffer doing the long revisions and different changes. So I'm really appreciative of the clients who trusted me. They've participated in the process. They give me a good brief, or they answer my questions so I can formulate a brief for them. And then when the work goes out there, like, you even get wowed that, oh, this thing has really resonated with people. Where, like, some of the projects I've done since 2020, I didn't anticipate, like, there's some which I thought would blow up, and they didn't blow up as much. But the one which really, really blew up, that I didn't think would blow up as big, but it really, really blew up, was KO, Kenya Originals.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That's the one project everybody's like, ah, you're the guy who, like, I can be like, oh, I'm Brian Omolo. They'd be like, oh, hi. And I'm the guy who did KO. Then they're like, oh, you're the guy. You know, it's always like
when I was telling, like, yeah, when I was telling my friends that I was going to interview, I was like, oh, okay. Then I was like, yeah, he did the KO. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, when I show my portfolio, they're always like, oh, nice. Then they see KO, they're like, oh my God, you're the guy, who made you? You know, and out of the projects I did that time, I didn't think, like, I knew it was good. I was really excited to see it out there. But I thought the other ones would have created more of a buzz. So I've started to see clients also need to really, the success of that KO project is just as much them as it was me. Like, they gave me a very, very good brief. They did their part. They were very clear. Even before they were choosing me, it's like they already knew even what they wanted. So I felt like my work was easy. I felt like I did 40, 50% of the work. The videos they edited, the way they put it out there, like, it was really, 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 really dope. They handled all of that. And I think other companies can really learn from them, because I've seen companies spend a lot of money on illustrators to create stuff, and then the way they launch it out, they don't do as good a job with it, and then we kind of feel bad for them, you know, like, they paid you well, but you're not seeing them get the results they're supposed to get. So the problem was how they chose to put it out there wasn't quite as. So you kind of learn from your clients as well. You learn what works, you learn what doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, KO is I love it because it's so unique. Like, I don't know. It's just, when I was growing up, I used to be like, how come we don't have, like, branding or some kind of, like, illustrative representation of Nairobi and our culture, God. You know? I and then you just see KO and you're like, exactly. This is exactly what I was saying, you know?
Like, you have no idea. Like, that was me. Like, when I graduated in 2011 and then came back home, that's what was paining me from 2011, 2012, 2013. It wasn't like maybe now in 2014, that's when I felt at least someone has given me a chance to do something with their company using my illustration. But all those years, I was just like, why are we just having the same billboards? A photo, some text, logo at the bottom. A photo, some text, logo at the top. A photo, you know, like we didn't even have like motion graphics. Like now things like motion graphics are normal. They are part and parcel of advertising. Back then you couldn't convince anyone. Like I worked for an ad agency for combined, like I worked at two ad agencies and then one design company. There is no company that ever allowed me to do illustration.
Seriously?
Not even once. Like, it was always, just do the normal. A photo, text, logo at the bottom. Yeah. When you try and suggest, yo, maybe if you do illustration like this, or maybe if you do like that, there's not a single company that allows it. So that's why it was just clear, I need to leave this place, I need to quit, so that I can express ideas the way I want. And then companies will... It was always companies abroad that were like, yo, we'd love for you to do for us this. And then now that's when it's like, now the locals catch up.
Yeah.
You know, now is when they're catching up. I think that's also another powerful thing creatives can learn. Like, don't get frustrated that, oh, our industry is not doing this, our industry is not doing that. You just start doing it.
Exactly.
Start doing it, make time for passion projects. Do that thing which you really feel you're aching to see in this Kenya. And then slowly, slowly, people will start seeing the benefit of it once you've done it.
But I feel like KO is one of those projects that like is going to challenge like brands continuing, like going forward, because I feel like Kenyans are waking up now, even with advertising and even photography. Like back in the day, you would never see even a black face. Like, let's just even start there. Like, someone is advertising for you something and they don't even look like you. Like, okay, what is going on? But now you see like Kenyan celebrities and Kenyan actors like doing advertisements and being on billboards. Like, it's exciting. It's different. So
And like, shout out to the agency that does work for KO. There's a small agency called Media Made in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Their creative director is a lady called Sola Green. The guy who does the content and video is a cinematographer called Densu. Two very cool people. Like, working with them on KO is just dope. Like, Sola is very cool in terms of framing the brief for you. Densu is a storyteller, so even when he's filming the thing and collaborating with you, it was so effortless. I don't think people realize how much. Like me, I feel like I did 40% of the work.
Really?
Then they did the rest. So it's a lesson even to like I think there's some ad agencies that do it right, and then there's some that really do it wrong. And or sometimes it's the clients who are not letting them do things. Like, it's a whole, like, you start learning that this is our team thing. Like, if guys really want this thing to work, we all kind of need to be on the same page and let the ideas flow together.
I really like the fact that you are a lecturer, because you're passing on like that mentality and that drive to other young people. So I kind of want to like challenge you also. You see, you know a lot of people in the industry who are actually doing it right. So I feel like I would challenge you to encourage them to have like a mentee, like someone they're mentoring, to go to think like them, because that's the only way like we'll eradicate this boring like people who just think in a straight line. So the few people who you know that you've worked with who are interesting and they can take risks and they're good at their job, maybe you can encourage them to get at least one person that they're mentoring to think in that same direction, so that we can grow in a faster rate or something like that. Yeah,
I agree with you completely. And there are times when we've been able to make that happen, but there are also times when it doesn't work. Like there are some students who they're given that chance and they really waste it. Like, I've had students ghost interviews, or you'll find I link them up, like, especially like if I notice someone is a very good illustrator. I know illustration gigs out there, there are not many jobs where you can be hired like 9 to 5 and you're an illustrator. A lot of the times if you really want to be an illustrator, it's like a freelance kind of life. But you can tell someone is fresh out of school, they're not ready to just work for themselves. So you try and put them in a place where at least they'll be illustrating on a daily. And you organize, you make the link up, they go, they talk to the person. Then you find that person has asked them to do some stuff, they ghost. That's happened like 3 times. So yes, I definitely take that challenge and I'll try and hook people up more and more and more. But I think also for the younger generation, not all of them, but a lot of them sometimes take things for granted. Like they think, say, I got this chance now, I can get it again another time. And that's not the case. Like if you knew how rare some of these opportunities are, like you never take a chance for granted. You never complain, oh, I have to take the matatu 1 hour away. Like you'll be happy to do it. Because I used to commute to college, back when Mombasa Road was just 2 lanes. I'd be in traffic so long, and then you walk long distances and then you're in traffic again. Like the stress of just going to school was already, let alone the projects, and then slow dial-up internet. Like we've come from far. So not that you need to just swallow every inconvenience, but just know if you're getting an opportunity to do the thing you love every day, don't waste that chance. Like be ready. You're given an inch, take a mile. Like shoot shots every day. Like one thing I'm really happy, sometimes you see a lot of grants, like you see British Council putting out a lot of grants, Goethe Institute, sometimes Alliance, Sondeka Awards. And those are not things that were there before. There was another grant that closed the other day, African Filter. So if you're young and you're not taking advantage of those things, I'm telling you, one day you'll really, really regret. You'll really, really be like, well, that was actually the chance. That was my opportunity. I let it pass. So shoot all the shots. And I think the more you're the type of person who, it becomes your brand. It's like, I call this person and I know they'll shoot this shot. Next time I'll remember to call them again. But there's some people who you call and it's always an excuse and it's always, this time I'm not ready. Or even worse, they'll tell you they'll do it and then later on they don't do it. And now I'm looking bad. Like, Briona, you sent us this guy who's a fraud, or this lady who's a fraud, she didn't show up. Yeah, so sometimes that happens. But we learn and we go. Like, we don't hold grudge, we're developing. We can learn from what, like, we can learn, like, I think us guys, we are still behind what they're doing in the West, which has its challenges. But the advantages it has is we can look at what they went through and what they did, and then learn from them. Like the way digital has come and now we're really existing in a virtual realm, we can see the positives and the disadvantages it has caused on people in the West, and then make sure that as we don't follow that same footstep, like you don't need to follow the same mistake twice. You can learn from it and then make sure your time you're doing it better, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay. I hope no one listening to this like podcast ever does things like that. Please just do your best. Make sure you work. It's like your final project. Like, this is the only job I'll ever get. And I'm going to ask this last question. This one is just for me because I want to know. How did you develop like your storytelling skills? Because your work is like so beautiful and well done, and at the same time it like communicates the message so clearly in a relatable way. So this one is for me. This one I want to know. You.
One thing I'm realizing is you pick up things along the way. So when I was in high school, you know, we started out with still life drawing, so you just draw things as they are. Then now you get into abstract, then you start trying to communicate things in different ways, like you try and use symbolism. You enjoy that. Then now you start going into graphic design, where in graphic design, it's always about a certain message. You know, graphic design is not like art. Design solves a problem. Like when you're driving on the street and you see a stop sign, it's not an artwork that everyone can interpret in their own way. Everyone needs to see that sign and get funny. The same message. This is a stop. Or when you go to ladies and gents, the icon for gents or the icon for ladies is not an artwork you're interpreting in your own way. It's a message. Like, everyone needs to understand, this is gents, this is ladies. Now, the icon doesn't have to look at the same. Like, you go to some hotels, they've designed their gents icon in an interesting way. They've designed the ladies icon in an interesting way. You go to Two Rivers, it's even a portrait, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can do it in different ways, but it all needs to communicate the same thing. And that's the space I'm in. Like, I use art, but the art also needs to communicate. So you start going through that process. And I think because I was an artist, then a designer, then an illustrator, definitely helped. And then when you work in ad agency, you know, advertising in Kenya, it's tough. It's tough to work in. It can be a very toxic industry to work in. More often than not, you hear people having very, very negative, toxic experiences. But one of the positive experiences you have is there is nowhere in this country where you learn about how to sell ideas and win business like the way you learn in advertising. Like, my folks would be on my case about how, you need to get a master's, you need to get a, like, I just told them, Cheki, these 2 years of advertising is equivalent to 2 master's degrees. Like, the stuff I've learned, the things I've experienced, you know, the highs, the lows, is equivalent to like 2 master's degrees. You learn so much. But in terms of like how to sell ideas, like how people come up with, there's the campaign, and then how that campaign rolls out in terms of a TVC, a print ad, a radio ad, digital activation, the website, the printed stuff. Super, super duper inspiring to be part of, like, to see that. I'd go through all those painful experiences again just for that knowledge I got. So I think that, and then also people you look up to online, like there's illustrators in the top of my mind where I'm always like, wow, this guy is so dope. He communicated this like this, or that guy is so dope, and they communicated that like that. And sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes you're trying to do something and then it's not quite come out the way you want. So you agonize on it. Some days you do it well, some days you don't do it so well. But you just keep showing up the next day to try again. Like, right now there's an art series I've been working on since like 2019.
Really?
It's like imekwama, and it's kwamad inside me. Like, it's flowing out, but it's kwamad. I've only done like maybe two. I've finished 2 pieces. I'm working on the third one. Mm-hmm. And then I'm in the stage of writing down ideas and brainstorming for the rest, because I've not done an art. I've not like created a proper body of work just for me since like what? Since 2016.
Oh, wow.
That was I was in a group exhibition in 2016. That was the last time. So I can feel the alarm bell ringing inside my head, like, yo, it's time. Yo, it's time. So yeah, I think artists, we are our own. You know, there's artists who can create stuff for other people with ease. Like, I think I'm that type of person. If it's a client brief, I can do it even in a short time. But when it's for myself, oof.
Yeah.
Just like, I want to change this. I want to redo this. Or this part's not ready yet.
Yeah.
You know, like that. The starting of every project is always the most agonizing part for me. But once I have the idea and then I'm rolling it out, now it becomes less strenuous.
I don't know why when I hear a project has taken such a long time, I get even more excited because I'm like, that thing will be amazing. I don't know why in my head, it usually registers. When I hear like, I've been working on this for like a few years. I don't know. I feel like maybe because I've studied a lot of art history, I feel like the ones that took like every part of that artist are the ones that just come out like, oh my God, unbelievable, you know?
I hope.
Yeah. So
the more time you take, you're just like, I really hope it meets my expectation.
Okay. So my questions are over. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was so interesting and informative.
Thanks so much. I was looking forward to the, like, I'd see the posts, I'd see the stories. I was like, and I think keep doing it. We don't tell enough of our own stories. Like, in my classes, I would mention something like, Just a Band, assuming everyone knows who Just a Band is, or you'll assume everyone knows who Mutua Madeka is, Osborne, and then I see the blank expression on their faces, and I'm like, you guys don't know who Just a Band is?
Yeah.
You guys don't know who Issa is? You guys don't know who Mutua Madeka is? So I realized, and I like people who are doing this podcast where like we get to tell these stories. It's really, really important. That's how the next generation learns, and that's how we also... we get to learn from each other. We get to see, hey, by the way, it's been a good journey. It's amounting to something. Yeah.
I have the exact same mentality, especially when I was in school and everything I'm reading is just Western art history, Western art culture. It's like, okay, and then Africa, tulifanya. Like, yeah.
Exactly.
So, okay, we have 1 minute. Anyway, thank you so much. And you're welcome back anytime if you have any interesting stories or information you want to share.
So I think when I finish the series, I'll see.
I'll plan
like a tour, a whole tour, like different podcasts and talk about what to expect. Yeah.
Sawa.
All right.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. This has been Uncurated Podcast. We will be uploading a new episode every week, so follow our Instagram page, uncurated.podcast, for updates and more fun creative content. Enjoy the rest of your week.